This episode of the Lou Rockwell Show is sponsored by...
Does civil disobedience really get you excited? Go to freestateproject.org, get signed up, move to New Hampshire, get involved with the next wave of liberty activism, and be the next Rosa Parks. The Free State Project is your best chance for liberty in your lifetime. freestateproject.org.
This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
What's great to have as our guest... Dr. George Selgin. George is professor of economics at the University of Georgia, and he's also teaching this year at West Virginia University. The Mises Institute has a long history with George. He was the first student to receive a scholarship from us way back when he was a graduate student at New York University. He's done a lot of very important work. We publish his Praxeology and Understanding monograph that originally published as an article, and we're just thrilled to be part of the publication of his new book, Good Money, which is about Birmingham button makers and the Royal Mint and private money in Great Britain. So, George, first of all, welcome, and tell us why you wrote this book.
Oh, thanks, Lou. It's a real pleasure to be back at the Institute. I wrote Good Money because I felt that having written about private production of paper circulating money in free banking, that it was time to turn to coins. Indeed, I concluded that coins were in some ways more important because the government prerogative of money supply began with the monopolization of coins. And all of the original arguments as to why governments needed to supply money were originally arguments about why it needed to supply coins. So I became interested in examining the actual history of episodes of private supply of coins to see what happened when governments didn't monopolize their production. And that one episode in England in the Industrial Revolution proved to be so captivating and so important in the lessons it contained that I ended up writing a whole book just about it.
When there was a shortage of coinage, how did private manufacturers supply that? What happened?
Well, it's amazing how easy it seemed for them to solve a problem that the British government hadn't been able to solve, that no government in the world had been able to solve. And they simply did it by applying relatively normal commercial principles to coins. What they did actually produce were copper coins mainly, and later some silver coins, which were IOUs. They were token money. They weren't really intended to circulate at the value of the metal they contained. They circulated for more than their metal worth. But they were IOUs, good IOUs, and their issuers promised to take them back and redeem them in gold coins, or perhaps in well-known banknotes like Bank of England notes, if somebody hadn't collected enough of them to represent the value of a whole gold guinea or the value of a £5 Bank of England note. And because these were IOUs and they were privately issued ones, the issuers had to take a great deal of care in the designs of the coins to make sure they couldn't be convincingly counterfeited, because otherwise the issuers would be exposed to the replication of their IOUs. So the result of this was that you had the most wonderfully engraved coins with all of the top-end anti-counterfeiting devices, the state-of-the-art anti-counterfeiting devices, and they were much more carefully designed and engraved than any Royal Mint products, especially any Royal Mint products for the lower denominations. And as a result of the private mints and issuers taking matters into their own hands, England's very severe shortage of coins was eliminated within a relatively short period of time. I'd say about 3-4 years. They went from severe shortage to having only little pockets of shortchange problems.
And they circulated all over Scotland and England? And
they were mainly in England. There were some in Scotland, and there were also some in Ireland where shortages had been very serious. But not all of the coins circulated very widely. There were a few major issues that did circulate almost nationwide. And they did so by virtue of the size and reputations of the companies that issued them, but also because in these cases, the coins could be redeemed in more than one place. They could be redeemed, for example, in London and also in some major provincial towns. But there were lots of the so-called commercial coins that could only be circulated, that only circulated within their locales. And that wasn't a big problem in those days because your average worker hardly ever left town. So to have a money that was only useful locally was not a tremendous burden in general.
But as we know, when private businesses succeed in making the government look bad, the government tends to do something about it.
That's exactly right. So the first question relating to that is why the government tolerated private coinage at the time it did in England in the first place. And the simple answer to that is that the Royal Mint thought copper coinage was sort of a side activity and a bit of a nuisance at that. They got very well compensated for the relatively small amounts of gold coin that they produced, and most of the mint authorities were on essentially sinecure, so they really didn't have to produce many gold coins to live pretty well. Consequently, when private authorities, desperate for change, started to mint their own coins, the attitude of the Royal Mint at first was, fine, let them take that matter off our hands. It's nothing we like to trouble ourselves with. However, in the long run, they regretted having done that because not only did the private coin makers and issuers basically show everybody that they could produce better small copper change than anyone else, but they then moved into the territory of making silver coins. And this was a result of the Bank of England having first been allowed to strike its own coins. Well, it was a private firm that created the legal precedent that allowed hundreds of other firms to start issuing silver coins. Well, at that point, the Royal Mint, really started to break out into a sweat. Because now they're thinking, wait a minute, pretty soon they'll be producing gold coins. And once that's happening and it works, the jig's going to be up. People will see that we're not even necessary at all. Well, sure enough, a guy in Reading, England, named John Berkeley Monk, started issuing his own gold coins around 1810, 1811, at which point the government decided to crack down. So although the gold private coins were very few in number, they were the straw that broke the camel's back. And then you had a series of legislative acts that crushed out private coinage, but did so before, and a long time before, years before the government, the Royal Mint, had straightened out its coinage production procedures. So that the country was exposed to a severe shortage all over again. This attempt to crack down on private coinage resulted in a great deal of hardship for the common people, especially.
George, we had the same thing in our own country, although not as extensive, right? I mean, we had the California privately issued gold coins. There were privately issued gold coins in North Carolina. And, of course, the federal government crushed them, too.
Yes, it did. And we also had episodes of private token coinage. But the California gold coins are very significant because they make sort of a complementary episode to the one I talk about in my book. What they show is that the private sector is good at producing full-bodied basic coins like gold and silver coins, as well as token coins to use as small change. It can do it all. We have the history for that, and we have the history of it doing it not only well, but better than governments were doing it at the same time. The California mints, for example, arose to meet a need that the federal mints at the time could not meet, which was to provide gold coins speedily to the West Coast citizens who needed exchange media. And if they had to turn to the U.S. government, they would have had to send the gold back to Philadelphia and wait over 6 months to get the coins, which was a very costly delay.
Well, George, we know we already have had the theory about how money can be privately produced, like everything else, I might add. But your book, Good Money, is such an extraordinary piece of research And I must say, beautifully written. I want to recommend it to everybody. It's just a great story, in addition to being an important piece of scholarship. And you also have some fantastic color plates of all these coins. Just beautiful and just extraordinary, and a great, thrilling, and also, of course, a sad episode, but one very much worth reading for anybody interested in monetary issues, which in these days, of course, are of special interest. And I want to congratulate you on the book. Get it at Mises.org. And Professor George Selgin, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much, Lou. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.